Hey, soccer fans and SO peeps and MLS aficionados. We are back at Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central talking all things week 23. Are we in 22? Anyway, it is the July 23rd, 24th recap here at Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. I'm your host, Nick, and it is Monday. It is July 25th. I am full of my wife's Greek style cooking, her specialty. Love it, and we're talking MLS soccer, so what better way to spend a Monday night? Now, this week, the designated players from around the league lit up the scoreboards and dominated the headlines. We had 8 designated players scoring goals, and remind you, Gareth Bale isn't a DP. He found the back of the net as well. Now, for New York City, Maxi Morales scored, assisted by Tati Castellanos. TFC, Bernadeschi gets his. Ferreira down in Dallas bags one. Lodeiro scores for Seattle. And in the Vancouver versus Chicago game, Cavallini and Shaqiri score for their respective teams. Nijgoda bags another one for Portland. Driussi with a double for Austin. And young DP Kevin Cabral scores for the LA Galaxy. That's just the tip of the iceberg for all the goals and the action that we're going to talk about. We're going to recap the games. We are going to talk about the Chicago Fire in our second half team profile. And if we've got questions, we're going to make sure we take them from all of our live chat viewers and listeners via YouTube. Stay tuned for all of that and more in the second half, or in the entire show, let me say. Back right after this. Hey guys, once again, I'm Nick for Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central, and I want to thank you for joining us on our live YouTube chat we do every Monday night, recapping Major League Soccer and all the scores, headlines, and news from around the league, as well as doing our team profiles. So we are going to start off with our recap, running down the schedule, looking at the games and the highlights, and I want to welcome those already in our chat. Brother BKL, great to hear from you again. Jose Hernandez, great to have you back in the chat, man. It's been too long. I hope you're doing well. Red Bull Insider even says, it was an exciting week in the MLS world. Let's get this started. And I couldn't agree more with you, RBI Insider. So let's do it. We're going to start off with NYCFC hosting Inter Miami. And what we're going to remember for this one, Tati Castellanos' last game for New York City. Maybe he comes back in the future. Who knows? We're not going to talk about that. But his last game right now, he ends up getting a goal called back for offside. It looked pretty questionable to me. But he does get the assist for Maxi Morales. He goes out with the win. And big picture, New York City is a point off Philadelphia for top of the Eastern Conference. And New York City's got a game in hand. So they are in a great spot. Now, Maxi's goal. Let's talk about this for a second. Assisted from Tati, like I said. He megs the keeper from an extremely tight angle on the touchline, and it's a fantastic finish from Maxi Morales. Then Aber gets the second one, and Sean Johnson, can't forget about goalkeeper Sean Johnson, comes up with some big saves to keep the clean sheet and secure the 3 points. Now, we got to talk Tati Castellanos here, right? He's been one of the biggest stories in MLS during the summer transfer window. Now, he is transferring to newly promoted Girona in Spain's La Liga. And everyone is talking about how successful he's going to be. And I think he will be too. And I said it last week a little bit because he is a very physical striker in a league that's dominated by technical ability. And I think that's going to bode well for him. But really, we've seen Tati become this kind of emotional, high-energy, finishing striker to the whole package, right? He can counter-press and press. He's learned to control his emotion, and he's not making silly fouls and picking up silly cards. He can score with his head, with either foot, from distance, close range. His movement has improved over his years with NYCFC. He's a complete striker. He doesn't have to learn anything new. He just has to take his abilities and just make them better. And what better place to do it than over in La Liga for newly promoted Girona? I think he's going to be great, and you know what? They're going to get a lot of American fans in Girona and over in La Liga because of that. This was an excellent game for New York City, as we mentioned, and I want to show a picture that we got from one of our good friends, one of our fans and longtime supporters here. You can follow him along on Twitter at datboydavi, B-O-I-D-A-V-I. DSO, you remember him from some of our earlier chats. He was at the game at Yankee Stadium there. Sends us this picture, and first of all, great seats, man. Perfect view for all the goals on that end of the field. That's a fantastic view. And he has been high on Tati. He's been sharing with us a lot of links. I know Brother BKL, you've been out there too, sharing a lot of info about him. But I want to thank DSO for sending us this picture, for sending off Tati in style. He even said there were like 23,000 people at the stadium for this game. Like, that's the most they've had probably that for a non-playoff game, I think. So huge, huge send-off for Tati. He had a really nice message that he put out. And with that, we're going to continue moving on our list here. We spent a lot of time on NYC, and we got a lot of games to cover. Next up, Cincinnati hosting and drawing Nashville 1-1. Vasquez gets the goal for Cincinnati. Teal Bunbury gets the one for Nashville. Teal Bunbury? Yep, Teal Bunbury. That Teal Bunbury gets the goal for Nashville, and they get the draw. I'm a little worried about Nashville, guys, and let me know what you think about this, because Nashville has one win in their last five games, along with two draws and two losses. Also a little worried about Cincy. They have no wins in their last five games, four draws and a loss. So I can't remember if they've been playing a lot of road games, which sounds about right. But still, these are teams that have aspirations to be in the playoffs for Cincinnati, and for Nashville to be in, you know, a home playoff team hosting that home game in the Western Conference of all conferences, right? This doesn't bode well for either of those chances. You know, as we know, the playoff picture is really tight, and as we know, Nashville has to contend with LAFC, a surging Portland and Seattle. Not that they're going to be probably pushing into the top four, but RSL and Minnesota are camped out right there right now. So these are not points that these teams can be dropping. Also, we have to mention one of the biggest headlines does come from Nashville from this past week, because they sign USMNT International Shaq Moore, who's going to be a right back for them down in Nashville. I think it's a wonderful signing. I haven't heard anyone say anything negative about it. At least that's not a Euro snob and thinks that all good players should play in Europe. Now, this is great for Shaq Moore. He's going to get a lot of playing time. He comes over from Tenerife in Spain. He's played 90. He had 90 appearances for them in the Spanish second division. He has spent his entire career in Spain, floating up and down between the top flight and the second division. So he definitely has the talent and the ability, and now he's going to get the playing time and the ability to showcase it. Now, Nashville says they had wanted Shaq Moore since January, since the winter transfer, and they stuck with it, which would explain why a team who's struggling to score goals signs a right back. But he is a chance creator. He can play wing back. He can get those crosses in. And if you remember him from his few games with the USMNT, he's played some excellent balls into the box, and that's going to be great to have Lovitz on one side serving him up and Shaq Moore on the other side serving him up. The other reason they signed a defender is they had transferred Alistair Johnson to Montreal for $1 million in general allocation money, so it just makes sense to fill that spot as well. Just a final thought on that, Shaq Moore is a 25-year-old right back. They had to pay a $2 million transfer fee for him. He's got a contract through 2025 with an option for 2026, so he has a good couple seasons here. That control potentially through 2026 is going to be huge if they want to sell him on to a bigger club, make some money back. 2 years of control, that's fantastic. Now let's take a look at the next match. Columbus draws New England 0-0. And to me, this was a meh result for both of these teams. Both of these teams are kind of treading water, in my opinion, when it comes to making the playoffs. Columbus is trying to pull away from some of that middle-of-the-pack Eastern Conference teams and go for maybe a fourth or fifth spot in the Eastern Conference. Meanwhile, New England is just trying to get above the playoff line again. They are now 2 points out. Looking at the next result, Orlando falls at home to the Philadelphia Union, 1-0. And once again, Orlando City offense goes missing despite 63% of the possession. They can't get Nico Iacchini in the lineup fast enough. And once again,
Nick, what's going on, man?
Grab 3 points there. So, hey, look who has jumped on into the chat. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Michael Yalmi is here with us. Brother, how you doing?
Hey, man, doing all right. Hanging in there. It's been a long, long day. Got a lot of work done, and it's been crazy, but hanging in there, man.
Fantastic. Gee, Mike, I was just wrapping up how Philly, with Daniel Gazdag, who, of course, gets the goal for them, wrapping that game up, and you're strangely just in time to talk about that TFC result. That 4-0 stomping of expansion side Charlotte. So I'm just going to shut up for a few minutes and let you run with this, man, because I know how excited you were for this game.
Oh, yeah. This game was awesome, and I actually watched this game from start to finish, every single minute of it. It was amazing, and it was actually – we were stuck in Tifton, Georgia, and the AC unit in the RV went out. So it was 94 degrees inside the RV, and we had the TFC game on, and we had two dogs panting away. All three of us, that were me and two of the kids, were just sweating like crazy. It was quite an experience. But, man, what a game. What a game. That's a new Toronto FC. It's a new team. It's a new belief. It's a new forget about everything that's happened to this point. All that's happened to this point is – TFC got rid of some people and cleaned house, got it, brought in a new coach and a new system and a completely new roster. And now it's the new time with Insigne and Bernadeschi. It completely transforms that team, completely transforms Toronto FC. Now, is the hole too big that they dug themselves so far? I personally don't think so now after seeing what I saw, because Charlotte, albeit they're an expansion team, they're not a horrible side. They haven't been playing horrible football. They're not like they were the first three games of the season, or remember the first like 12 games of Minnesota United season. So they're a decent team. But, man, what a game. What energy at BMO Field. Haven't seen a night like that at BMO in a long, long time. And it was perfect because the whole plan was just to only give those guys 45 minutes so that they could be rested up for Vancouver, which really is the one game that means something to Toronto FC this season. And it was perfect. Got to do exactly that and didn't need them in the second half, and then the old TFC came back out for that second half. What were your thoughts, Nick?
Well, first of all, Mike, you know, we got a lot of people jumping in the chat, welcoming you back here. Red Bull Insider, Ramon Poblano, great to have you with us. A new wise man says you were stuck in Tifton, Mike. Damn.
Yep. And it's funny, I actually messaged
a new. You know you were out there. Yep. Also, I want to show this comment from Talk NYCFC. Says, Mike, sounding like all TFC fans, I don't think y'all are making the playoffs. Sorry. Well, we just so happen to see Toronto is still 13th out of 14 teams. They've got 22 points. They're 6 below the line, and they're averaging a point per game, which is not playoff material. But no. You said it, Mike. They're a new team. This is not the TFC of the first half. And as long as they get in, they've got a chance to make some noise in the playoffs. In fact, we were talking about this, everybody, just texting each other. And I should have downloaded the picture to show you. Mike actually put a bet at the beginning of the year for TFC to win MLS Cup. What were the odds, Mike, that you were getting on that bet? Was it like – it was some ridiculous, like, Leicester City kind of odds, right?
Yeah, it was insane. Plus 6,600. That one was probably after about three games into the season when it seemed like the kids were looking okay and whatnot. So it wasn't preseason, even though I did pick them to win preseason. I didn't put that bet down until probably three or four games in. And that's when I got the crazy insane odds. But I called it in the preseason. I stick with it now. That side that was out there is something different. You can unlock Michael Bradley. I mean, hello, Michael Bradley. The guy has sucked for a long time, and has a brace and looked like Michael Bradley at Roma. Completely different player. Not like we've never seen that guy at Toronto FC before. So if they can somehow work that in with the midfield of Kay and Osorio and having Bradley kind of running in a free role like that, I mean, guys, it's going to be disgusting. Nobody wants to see this team in the playoffs. Nobody. I guarantee you that. Doesn't matter if you're number one. Doesn't matter if you're LAFC. Doesn't matter who you are. You don't want to see Toronto FC with those guys. So, hey, Yeah, DSO, I hear you, man. I'm sure that people are thinking they're not going to make the playoffs. But we'll see. It's going to be a fun ride. They're only 6 points out with 12 games to go. So that's not – although they do have to jump five teams. But we'll see. We'll see.
As Tommy NYC says, if you make the playoffs, just knock out the Dead Bulls.
Of course. Of course.
But hey, I want to ask you, talk to us about Mark Anthony Kaye. Like, what has he been since coming over? I think he's only played two games. When they played against Chicago, I didn't see him do anything. So maybe he was just kind of getting adjusted. But, like, talk to us about Mark Anthony Kaye.
Well, I mean, it's really hard to tell with only the two games. I mean, that game in Chicago, yeah, nobody did anything. That game in Chicago was a joke. So you can't really judge him on that performance because the entire team was like, we came here to, like, kick the ball around. So then the second game being this game here with Charlotte, you know, it's a totally different setup. So it seems like that, you know, the team is like that new team. So it's hard to put a judge on it, but I mean, seeing what we saw with Bernadeschi in the lineup, with Insigne in the lineup, it's a different side. And I think Bob Bradley, this is kind of the plan that he was putting together, and it's all coming to. So it'll be interesting. But hey, there you go. Mark Anthony Kaye is going to lose you two games. Hey, you know what? It might happen. And then Daniil Henry might lose one as well because he's with TFC again. But hey, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun rest of the season. That's for sure.
You want to mention anything about Charlotte at all?
I mean, what's really to talk about? You ran into a buzzsaw. You're a good team. You're not great. You're probably not a playoff team. But you came into a circus, let's call it. Like, you went to a soccer game, but there was actually a circus there, and you didn't know what you were doing there. That's what happened to Charlotte, because this game was bigger than Charlotte was. And I know, okay, take some heat for your 59,000 fans and selling out the stadium and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that game was bigger than them, and it showed.
Without a doubt. That's definitely expansion team growing pains when you run into a team that was just feeling all sorts of good energy, especially at home. There's really not a case where an expansion team with no experience in that is going to be able to pull out a result. So I'm with you on that. I'm not going to judge Charlotte too harshly on this one. Yeah. I do love Ramon Poblano's comment here. TFC taking LAFC's leftovers.
Hey, when you take the coach and, you know, the coach that took you to the Champions League final and the coach that won you the Supporter Shield, when you take that coach, you're going to take some of those players. So I'll take those leftovers, Ramon. Love it, man. Love it. And I saw that post of you at the Clasico there in Vegas. Good stuff, man. Awesome.
So I think we've said about everything we can about TFC. Watch out for them. They're a brand new team. Bradley may have found the fountain of youth with Insigne and Bernadeschi running in front of him. Mark Anthony Kaye might be helping out in the midfield, you know, once he gets settled into his role, which shouldn't take too long playing for Bob Bradley again. TFC is dangerous again. Oh, boy.
That they are. And with that, guys, I want to leave you guys with one small fact, just because I got it kind of on a personal note. But so I'm down here in Florida and Talk NYCFC. I just saw that DSO there about the picture. Nick already put it up, man. Nick will put it up again when I'm out of here. But I am in the exact same room that I recorded the game of the Champions League final, LAFC and Tigres, that we hit the 1,000 subscriber mark on YouTube during that game. I'm back in that same exact room where we did that recording. So just a little fun fact here for SOP and whatnot. But with that being said, guys, I'm out of here. Nick, you're doing a great job holding it down, man. Thank you. All you guys, it's great talking with you. Hit me up on the socials, and we'll talk to you guys real soon.
Brother, thanks for joining us, man. You take care of yourself. Mike decided to cut out right before we started talking about Montreal. Go figure. What about that? Anyway, we got a few more people in the chat. Want to say hello to Dan Gehringer coming on in. Great to have you again with us. And, let me throw that picture up again from DSO, from Dat Boy Davey here in New York. Beautiful shot, man. A beautiful day for soccer in NYC. So thanks for sending that in. And for anyone out there listening, viewing, you can follow along all of what we do on social media at SOP Soccer on Twitter, or email us sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com, especially if you got any pictures of you at games, if you're wearing any SOP swag that you can get from the links in the YouTube video, and our channel description there, the about page. Feel free, send us in. We'll be happy to feature it on the channel, and you can tell everybody that you made YouTube for a little bit. We love seeing it. Also, if you want to continue to support the channel financially, you can leave us a super chat or a super thanks on YouTube. You can reach out to us for any potential sponsorships that you might want to talk about and promote yourself or your company. Again, at SOP Soccer on Twitter. You can direct message us or email us, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. So it was awesome to have Mike with us for a bit. And we are going to now continue rolling down our weekly recap with Montreal traveling to DC, coming back home with a win after a 2-1 victory on the road. This was a great win for Montreal. Definitely needed to bounce back and try and keep their place in the top four of the Eastern Conference. They've got 3 wins and 2 losses in their last 5, and now they're maintaining a 5-point gap between fifth place Orlando City, who, as we mentioned earlier, is losing and is in desperate need of Yokini to come in and find some goals for them. Next matchup, Houston hosting Minnesota. And Kyoto scores twice for the Loons, giving Minnesota the 2-1 victory over Houston. Minnesota is now third in the Western Conference. Did anyone think that was a possibility? Or I should say, did anyone outside of the Twin Cities area think that was a possibility at the beginning of the season? They've got 4 wins and 1 draw in their last 5 games. And really, I've been saying it the last couple weeks, ever since Adrian Heath got that contract extension and everything seemed to be solidified for them. You got Reynoso, who was really stepping up for a couple games, but did not play this game. And they still find the back of the net twice. So this is just fantastic result for Minnesota, who, by the way, on the road at Houston, only had 27% possession. Phenomenal result for Minnesota. Now we move to Sporting Kansas City hosting LAFC. Bale gets his first MLS goal in this one as LAFC wins 2-0. LAFC then maintains their 4-point lead over Austin in the Western Conference standings. And what's interesting, guys, LAFC did it with 40% possession. We've seen them do a lot more counterattacking this season. Now on the road against Kansas City, maybe that's not the most surprising statistic, but they end up getting the 2-0 victory. We talked a lot about LAFC last week, so I don't want to overdo it again this week. But all you need to know is they are still the best team. And as we have our guy Ramon Poblano jumping in earlier saying that LAFC bet the double. He thinks they are going to win MLS Cup and the Supporter Shield. Not bad. Also, hey, thanks, Connor No Soccer. Connor jumping in the chat. Great to have you again with us, Connor. I know you're a little disappointed with that Columbus result, but I'm sure they're going to make it very exciting as we continue on this season. And as we continue on our recap, Salt Lake hosting FC Dallas and losing to FC Dallas 1-0. Jesus Ferreira scores. The DP, a homegrown American striker, scores. And here's the fun fact. Here's what you take to the water cooler to all your soccer friends and conversations. Jesus Ferreira becomes the second MLS player, 21 years old or younger, to have 30 goals and 20 assists in the MLS. I think he might be even the 4th Dallas player to do that overall. So he's in rare company when it comes to his goal and assist stats at such a young age. Now you wonder if he sticks with MLS for the next 2-3 years, will we see him decline? Or is he going to take that success and leverage it into an opportunity with one of the major clubs in Europe? Remains to be seen. Right now, he's just focused on Dallas and prepping for the World Cup. On the other side of things, Salt Lake. They were sitting third in the West before this week. They're sliding down, and we'll go over the standings in detail in a little bit. But they only have 1 win and 1 draw in their last 5. Rest losses. So I wonder if the talent gap, the fact that they don't have any DPs or just 1 DP and they've had some injuries, I'm not intimately familiar with the Salt Lake roster. I know, shocking, right? But is the talent gap finally catching up to Salt Lake? Next matchup, we've got Seattle hosting Colorado Rapids. Another big Western Conference matchup with playoff implications on the line here. I didn't think Seattle would lose four in a row, and they didn't. Then again, I didn't think they'd lose three in a row, and they did. I didn't think they'd lose two in a row, and they did. But they end up with the win on this one. They needed every bit of sweat and grit and grind and a few refereeing decisions to go their way, and they get 3 points out of this one. Now, fans out there, find the replay of the first goal because it's just brilliant heads-up soccer by the Sounders. Colorado commits a foul against Seattle in the middle of the field, and they're arguing it. They're looking around. They're yelling at the ref, this and that. No one's paying attention to Seattle playing a quick free kick, and if they switch fields, find Jordan Morris, who gets in on the run and gets the shot in on goal. Great heads-up play by Seattle. We're starting to see this a little bit now, right? Remember the Atlanta goalkeeper last weekend taking too much time to set up the wall, doesn't see the referee give the sign to begin play, and look at that, ball's in the back of the net. Again, people slacking, people sleeping. You always have to know what's going on with the play. The thing about it is you usually see guys trying to disrupt these quick restarts, but the league has cracked down on that and is issuing yellow cards for time wasting by doing that. So you're not given as much leeway to disrupt the quick restarts, so you got to get your head in the game and get back on defense. Also, I really think Jordan Morris is kind of channeling his inner Clint Dempsey lately and just drawing PKs and getting tripped in the box and creating content and trying to force the referee to make a decision if he can't get a clean shot off. And Morris draws the PK in this one for Ladero to put it in the back of the net. Next up, we've got Vancouver sticking in Cascadia, hosting Chicago Fire and losing 3-1 to the previously dead and snuffed out Chicago Fire, who, guys, we're going to talk about the Fire in the second half of the show, but I got to tell you, I'm sure John Donovan, a longtime Fire supporter and friend of the show, is pretty happy with the results lately. You will hear his recap on the podcast side of things at our halftime show break, but on the YouTube side, make sure that you do go subscribe to the podcast or stick around. We'll talk a little bit about it in the second half of this show. Vancouver's going to want a lot of plays in this game back. I think they left a lot on the table, especially giving up late goals in each half and missing some opportunities. Oddly, though, Chicago ends up beating Seattle and Vancouver. Chicago might be in the running for the Cascadia Cup. No, I'm not gonna suggest that. We got too many Cascadia fans who listen and who tune in for me to suggest that, so I won't do that. Let's take a quick look at some of the comments here. Brother BKL getting back to NYCFC says 23,277 in attendance at Yankee Stadium. Wow, that's a playoff atmosphere. That's big atmosphere for MLS for packing them in Yankee Stadium there. Talk NYCFC says BS red card against Seattle. I'm trying to remember the play, but oh, that's right. I think it was the Seattle player, was it Rowe? I forget his name, Regan. Ends up getting two yellow cards and picking it up. Yeah, I think the second one was maybe a little, it was stupid on his part. I remember it now. He tries to do a slide and save the ball from rolling out of bounds, but he can't, and it would be a throw-in to Colorado. So instead, he like kind of flips the ball over the sideboard and like tries to make it look like the ball popped up and whatever. Clear time-wasting. It's stupid on his part. He should have never done that. We've seen the way the referees have been calling things this season. We know it's an emphasis in MLS to prevent time wasting and antics like that, as much as we all love to see it, as much as we all love the gamesmanship and to discuss it back and forth on social media. But it was just dumb and careless on his part. We've seen it happen in Chicago to a couple different players who are getting red cards as a result of a second yellow because of it. So just stupid on his part. Ramon Poblano says, I did say last week Bale was going to get a goal. You sure did. Now, I don't know if you're a gambling man, Ramon, but maybe throw a little something on a prop bet next time when you're having that good of a feeling about things. Great call on that one for sure. All right, let's wrap up with our last few games. The last game on July 23rd, Saturday, Portland defeats San Jose 2-1. This is a great come from behind win for Portland. They find two goals in the second half after conceding late in the first half. Though, you know, 42nd minute goal for San Jose, that can be really demoralizing for a team. Portland stuck with it. They even conceded 58% of the possession to San Jose, and they still get the win. Now, the Timbers are in eighth place in the West, just outside that playoff picture. They are tied in points with the Galaxy, who own the tiebreaker. Now, remember, in MLS, the first tiebreaker is wins, not goal differential, not goal scored or anything like that. It is wins. So they're 1 point behind sixth place Nashville, 1 point above ninth place Seattle. But Portland does not have tiebreakers as of right now against the Galaxy and the Sounders. So they got some work to do. They need results. They can't rely on tiebreakers, goals, or anything like that. Now, in this game, what I found interesting, Asprilla and Nishikori score, but Asprilla is coming a bit of a reliable striker for them. He's got a goal in each of his last three games. I think he did sit on the bench for one game, probably just kind of nursing a little knock. But the last three games that he's played in for Portland, he has found the back of the net. Now, here's your cool water cooler impress your friends statistic of this one. The Portland Timbers are undefeated against San Jose at home. Period. No qualifiers. They have never lost the game to San Jose at home. In fact, they're 14 wins, 2 draws against San Jose when they're the home team in Portland in MLS games. Now, this is the most home games played by one team against another without a loss in MLS history. So Portland is dominating San Jose in Portland. We'll leave it at that. Moving on to Sunday, July 24th, Austin and Red Bulls in a shootout. And the Red Bulls come out ahead 4-3. Like, I think maybe I called this a draw in our picks and predictions video, which, by the way, if you haven't subscribed to the channel, make sure you do that. Turn on your notifications and get our picks and predictions video where I look at all the matchups of the upcoming weekend. Try to release that video Wednesday night or Thursday, so make sure you're on the lookout for that. I think I predicted this as a draw because of New York's press slowing down Austin's offense, but neither of that was the case. Instead, you had a rotated Red Bull squad, but a rotated squad who knows their role within the Red Bull system, just getting the best of Austin 4-3. Go find the highlight reel. These are highlight goals all over the place. And then finally, the late game last night, LA Galaxy, a much-needed win over an Atlanta United team who just might not have enough depth on this team to make up for all of the injuries. LA Galaxy win 2-0. At home. Unfortunately, Chicharito does not get the goal. He is, you know, he scores in spurts, and hopefully he can get going by the end of the season, but instead we get the goal from Cabral, their DP, as well as the other, I'm spacing on his name right now. Anyway, we're going to take our quick break right now. I want to thank everyone for dropping comments in the first half of the show. We're going to take a minute to go get a drink. Go get a Skira Icelandic spring water. Soothe those vocal cords. If you're on the podcast side, you know you're going to hear your Chicago Fire update from John Donovan. If you're on the YouTube side, take this minute to go subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And friends, listeners, we will be back in just 1 minute.
This MLS Weekly Recap is sponsored by Skira Icelandic spring water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring in a nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, yes, pun intended, it's one of the best. Get some Skira today at your local 7-Eleven. And now it's time for our weekly Chicago Fire update brought to you by John Donovan. Take it away, John.
Nick. John Donovan here, covering the Chicago Fire in the MLS. Nick, I cannot understand. I mean, the second part of the season, second half of the season, the Chicago Fire are hot. It's this MLS is so interesting. It's almost like we're watching two different teams, Nick. The Chicago Fire literally took apart. They beat Vancouver 3-1, but the score, it should have been more like 6-1. I mean, they outplayed Vancouver. It almost looked like a team in a different league. Vancouver opened up the game playing very defensively against a Fire team that suddenly has settled on an offense, an incredible defense, and a very rough midfield, especially with Pineda playing. Every one of the players on the Fire right now are hot. The only guy I kind of worry about is Miguel Navarro. He's always on the edge of a card. But this team right now, if they can stay away from injuries, Nick, they are a team to look at for the playoffs. I I watched that game last night and I was just shocked to see how much they've improved. The game opened up. I mean, the Fire took the ball, took it to them right from the beginning. And one of the Vancouver players made a horrible throw in, and he virtually threw it to Shakira, who scored off his right foot with a beautiful shot and went off to the right corner. The goalie was blocked by his own men, but the game started out that way, and it just continued there. Vancouver did not really aggressively go out and get the ball until the second half. Although they scored a nice goal, but the scorers for the Chicago Fire were Shaqiri with the first one, Cedros with a beautiful shot, and Mueller. I just can't say enough about this guy. You know, the Fire finally have an offense. Duran, he's stretching these guys. He's fast. He's rough. And he gives, just by virtue of his speed, he's giving a lot of room for the wings. Gutierrez is becoming the player that I think everybody was hoping for. I know he might be out of position, but playing from that left wing, he is causing havoc. I mean, one-on-one against a fullback or a defender, it's a good chance Gutierrez is going to be in the for a good shot. Duran, what can you say about this guy? Again, speed, rough kid, isn't afraid to take a shot, which that's for sure. And Mueller, I think, you know, I was trying to think of a good trade that the Chicago Fire have made during the season, and I don't think that there's been a better one than Mueller. He is he's the best player on the squad right now. Shakira, he did have, you know, he went the full 90, which is really impressive. I know he's trying to get himself into, or he wants to go into that World Cup, you know, in the top shape, but he's playing well. He really is playing well. The Fire in the midfield, for me, one of the best players on their team is Pineda, the kid from Bolingbrook. He's smart. He's got all that college experience behind him. He's a rough kid. He will take a shot. And he played midfield his whole career at North Carolina. So he's comfortable in that position. And then Federico Navarro, you know, I want to say every time he's out there that he's a card ready to happen. But the guy is, he is really a rough guy to get free from. He's the epitome of a defensive midfielder. And finally, you know, the Fire, their defense, especially the fullbacks, you know, losing Holmquist was almost tragic for the squad. But Terran, all I can say is this guy is a monster coming at you. He's big, he's very fast, and he seems, Ezra seems to be able to have calmed this guy down so that he's playing the game of soccer intelligently, rather than wild and cards and so forth. You can't beat him. He covers well on the entire side of his field. If Sekulic gets caught downfield, Terran can make, he's fast enough to cover those wings coming down. So the combination of him and Cedros is really something to see. I mean, they're both tough, sturdy players. So if the Fire can make it into the playoffs, I don't know where they're going. But, you know, the whole league, you look at Toronto beating Charlotte 4-0 and with their new stars on the team, it seems like the league is really, especially the Eastern Division, is really rolling up. It's going to be this final push for the playoff spot. It's going to be something to watch, Nick. Very, very excited about the season. You know, I was looking ahead a little bit at the schedule, and you know they're playing Atlanta at home this week, this coming weekend, and that's going to be a game to see. I mean, Atlanta has to win. They've put a bundle of dough out on their field. I mean, after their initial success on their first couple of seasons, they brought in a coach. They've spent a lot of money. They got some injuries. They have to win it at Soldier Field, and the Fire have to win at Soldier Field. So I'm feeling like this game coming up this coming weekend is going to be a game and a half. Both squads need to win if they're going to stay in this playoff or close to the playoffs. There are still 12 games left, But both teams got to make their move now. So I think this coming weekend's game should be the game of the week. After that, they play Charlotte, and if they stay the way they're playing, they're going to beat Charlotte. So let's really cross our fingers and root hard for this this squad. You know, the players of the games, I'm going to start picking out my players of the game. Mueller was just outstanding. I mean, he I love watching him dribble. He gets these guys off balance, and he's lightning. I mean, his goal was a beautiful goal. But he can just get the – if he gets a one-on-one with a fullback, I'd hate to be that fullback because this guy knows can really get him rocking and rolling. I'm going to name another guy, Gutierrez. He is improving. You know, when they brought in Jairo Torres, everybody thought, oh, we got to get Torres and Mueller on the field together. Let's think about that again because Gutierrez is really playing well. He's fits into the squad. And, you know, with Duran coming down and opening up all of that area, Gutierrez and Mueller are a problem. And then the final guy for the game of the week was Carlos Terran. And, you know, the beginning of the season, Nick, I was not one of his biggest fans. But guess what? The guy's a beast. He can do it. He can bring the game to you. And he's calmed himself down. So thanks a lot, Nick. Looking forward to next week. Always like your show. Say hi to Mike. Bye.
Thanks for that Chicago Fire update, John. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, fans, we are back, and we had a lot of great comments come in over the break. Thank you, everyone. Talk NYCFC says, NYCFC with 41 points are the highest amount of points for a defending champ in a while. That sounds right. I haven't looked up the numbers or know them off the top of my head, but the fact that we have our teams playing in Champions League early on and that kind of dragging things on, that definitely would contribute to it. You're right. RBI Insider says Truisi is a stud. Those goals he scored were insane. No doubt about it. That's one of the best signings in MLS over the last year. Dan Gehringer, LA Galaxy are playing better than their standings. You know, Dan, I haven't watched a lot of Galaxy, mostly because it's way past my bedtime. But I haven't watched a lot of them, and I think they're victims of their hype, right? You're probably right that they are playing a lot better soccer than what we're giving them credit for. Heck, they're sitting seventh in the Western Conference, as we show here on the screen as we're looking at the Western Conference standings. 1.43 points per game, not terrible. And as far as their goals for and against here, you know, they're not doing too shabby, but they need more consistent scoring, and they definitely need to improve on their defense. If they can tighten a few things up for the end of the season, then we'll definitely be talking about them as a playoff team. Also, we got Talk NYCFC saying Tarbell is a terrible goalkeeper. I understand why San Jose got rid of him. And a new Wiseman says Atlanta shot themselves last night. Yikes. Anyway, a lot of good comments. If you're listening on the podcast, make sure you join us on occasion on the live chat, live stream Mondays on YouTube. Anyway, let's take a quick look at the standings, and then we'll get into the Chicago Fire recap. In the Western Conference, top two teams, no change, LA and Austin. We've got Minnesota and Salt Lake in the 3 and 4 spot. Dallas, Nashville, and the Galaxy round out 5, 6, and 7, round out our playoff picture. I don't think anyone's catching LAFC. I doubt Minnesota or Salt Lake or even Dallas could catch Austin at this point. So we're looking at those two teams fighting for the top of the West and most likely the Shield. Now here we're going to take a look in the middle of the pack. Sixth place Nashville is on 31 points. Houston in 11th is on 25 points. So Houston wins a couple games. Depending on the results above them, they're right back in the thick of things. And very similar in the Eastern Conference, starting at the 5 spot, Orlando's on 30 points. Number 11, Miami's on 25 points. So again, depending on some of these middle-of-the-table results, you can jump up pretty quickly in MLS. Looking at the top of the Eastern Conference, we've got the Philadelphia Union with 42 points, also Shield contenders. New York City with 41 points in that second spot. I don't know if New York, Red Bull, or Montreal are going to be able to catch Philly and City for one of those top two spots, but they're definitely looking like a top half of the table playoff team, top four team, right? And I think that's really what we have seen to this point of the season. Philly, New York on both sides, as well as Montreal, have played like a playoff team throughout the season. Similarly, in the Western Conference, LAFC, Austin, Minnesota to a large extent have played like playoff teams. The other teams have had ups and downs, nothing that you could really solidify themselves on. So that's why those last three playoff spots on each conference are really up for grabs. And what team better to grab an Eastern Conference spot than the Chicago Fire, the team we are profiling in this second half of our weekly recap. As we do each and every week, we pick a team. I try to mix it up between East and West. But man, being from Chicago and seeing the results as of late, I couldn't avoid it any further. And I got to say thanks again to our sponsor, John Donovan, and Skira Icelandic Springwater for sponsoring our channel and for always filling us in on all things Chicago Fire. Thank you, John, for taking the time out each and every week to help us learn a little bit more about our home team here. Now, Chicago Fire are resurgent. They have rekindled the fire, if you will. And we got to start. I want to start, at least, and I'm running the show, so that's where we're going to go. I want to start by praising Chris Mueller, the best signing that the Fire have made this season. And really, one play in this Vancouver game epitomizes what I think he's brought to this team all year. The Chicago Fire are up 2-1 in the 90th minute. They turn over Vancouver. I think it's a 2v2 situation. They're on the counterattack. But again, it's 2v2. And when you're taught and you have equal numbers or lesser numbers, maybe you wait for support. Maybe you pull the ball back, especially in the 90th minute when you're up a goal. Waste some time, right? But Chris Mueller, when he sees the turnover, takes off like a man on fire up that left wing and turns this 2v2 into a 3v2 in favor of Chicago, gets the ball played to him brilliantly. And again, he could have dribbled off into the corner flag and tried to kill another minute, but he takes the defender one-on-one. He sees that the defender is giving him too much space, cuts inside on the right foot, bends it to the far post. Beautiful goal. It is something that Chris Mueller has tried. So what the heck, Vancouver? Get a scouting report, study some film, right? Or just play the guy in a strong foot. Terrible defending, but well played by Mueller because of his hustle and his hard work to get in the right position. He gets the opportunity. His teammates reward him, gets the opportunity to fire that shot, and it goes in far post. So I love everything about Chris Mueller that he has done this entire season with Chicago. Now, looking at the team as a whole, Chicago has 7 wins, 10 losses, and 5 draws on the season, sitting at 26 points and a -4 goal differential. But the offense is starting to click, in no small part to captain and center back Rafa Chijos, who's got 3 header goals on the season coming in from set pieces and some good crosses. By the way, we got to go negative because we're talking to Chicago team. You always got to find something negative to work in. Kasper Schabilko, their starting striker at the beginning of the season, the guy who I think has had the most goals in MLS over the last 3 or 4 years before coming to Chicago, he has as many goals as our center back. So just wanted to put that out there. Now, looking at the Chicago Fire season, I kind of break it down into 3 phases. The first one was defense. They led the league in goals against and clean sheets through like 8 or 9 games. Then there was phase 2, which was the free fall, I call it. They give up 18 goals in 6 losses and a draw from April to May. The international break could not have come at a better time for the Chicago Fire. Now, they were playing pretty good soccer, though, going into the international break and got a little unlucky with some results. So that's why I am now saying they're in phase 3, the post-international break resurgence. 5 wins, 3 losses, but 11 goals scored and only 8 allowed. They're in good shape right now. They're definitely playing better, and they're not really changing too much. They're just doing what they needed to, but better. We got to talk about their biggest signing in name and in news, Jerdan Shaqiri. A lot of people are ragging on him. A lot of people are calling him a bust because of his injuries, because the Fire haven't been in the playoff hunt since early on in the season. But if you look at what Shaqiri's doing, first of all, look at the eye test. The man goes north-south, to borrow a football phrase, right? He picks the ball up. He plays direct. He is lobbing balls in over the top. He's whipping balls in from the wings. He is creating opportunities for the other offensive players. And the more he is learning to play with his fellow teammates, the better he's going to get. If you go find the Intercontinental Football Show, which is hosted by Arlo White and Tyler Terrence, the Chicago Fire broadcasters, they interviewed Jerdan Shaqiri last week, and he says, like, I'm really starting to get to know my guys, especially Chris Mueller. So great to see. Keep an eye on them linking up. But also, Shaqiri leads the Chicago Fire in, like, every offensive category. He's got 4 goals, and there are 4 other players with 3 goals each. He has 8 assists. Brian Gutierrez is next with 4. And by the way, the league leader, Carlos Hill, has 11 assists. So Shaqiri is up there for assists in the league. He's got 34 shots, which is second on the team to Shabilko. Mueller has 30. Shaqiri has 10 shots on target, tied with 3 others. And he leads the team in key passes with 42 key passes. Now, Sekulic is the next on the team with 24. League leader, Carlos Hill, has 70, which is like 20 or 30 more than the next guy even. So, like, Carlos Hill is just a crazy chance creator for his team. Shaq might be top 5, top 7 in the league at key passes. And now that Duran and Mueller are getting more time along with Gutierrez and Shaqiri, everything looks better. There's nowhere that they can't get better. And where they're sitting at in the table, it bodes well for their playoff chances. Now, I'm gonna quickly run through a couple other things because we're running short on time here. I got to say, Carlos Teran is starting to develop nicely. He's kind of Wyatt Omsberg out of his role, right? Omsberg got the opportunity and really grew into the role and had been playing great until he had a season-ending foot injury. But we ripped on Carlos Teran really early on, right? He was just flat-footed, out of position, letting guys run by him, falling over his own feet. He's got consistent playing time now, and he's alongside Rafael Chihos, who's great to learn from. And you know what? Chihos, if he's going to go forward and get into these set pieces and attacking, and Teran, who's 6'2", also is going to be getting into those attacking zones, that tells you the confidence that the defense, both the coaching staff, the other defensive players, and especially their captain Chihos has in Teran, that they're all going forward in the attack. That you know, they're happy with him, that he's going to get back, that he's going to recover. One other thing quickly, we've got to mention manager Ezra Henrichsen. He has made a lot of mistakes. Now look at that Crew game when the Chicago Fire give up a 2-0 halftime lead to lose 3-2 against the team that Ezra was the assistant coach and should have known exactly what Caleb Porter and the Crew are going to do and how to stop it. He's made mistakes. He's gotten out-coached. And he's got to manage his bench and his subs better. His substitution patterns are extremely predictable. He does not use substitutions tactically. He just kind of does like for like. Now, whether that's because of the players he has available to him or because of his own coaching, you know, pick one, whatever. He definitely needs more talent. But you got to give him credit that he's got a lot of young players, a lot of homegrowns that he's getting playing time that are getting better as the season is coming along. Shoot, just look at Brian Gutierrez, right? And if they can upgrade Gaston Jimenez's designated player spot, if Jairo Torres can be playing a little bit better towards the end of the season and in the next season, if we let Duran and Bezerra develop as strikers, I think Henrichsen will be able to manage this team to some great results in the near future because he's got them buying in. He's got them not giving up on the season. He's got big name guys like Chihos and Shaqiri and Mueller like not giving up. And I say Mueller is a big name because he came back from Scotland to play for Chicago, his hometown team, and he's not going to let this season go to waste. So I really give Ezra credit for handling that. Now, where do the Fire go from here, everybody? They could get into the playoffs. They have a great shot to get into the playoffs, right? Look at the standings here. Chicago is 2 points off the playoff line right now and only 9 points off fourth place, 4 points off fifth place. We've seen Orlando not have any offense. We'll see what Yokini does. We've seen Columbus and Cincinnati slipped this week. Charlotte's falling. Is New England and Miami gonna move up? I don't know. They haven't shown that they can do it consistently. Chicago has as good a chance as any team to get in the playoffs, but they're definitely going to need some help with the teams around them, right? Now, their next 3 games are against Atlanta, at Charlotte, and at Philadelphia. So if they can get, you know, 4 or 6 points out of that, I'd be really happy. But here's what really it's going to come down to. Chicago has 2 more games this season against New England, and they have 2 more games against Charlotte, you know, one coming up shortly. If they can take 4 points each against those teams, then you will see Chicago ahead of Charlotte and New England in the standings, most likely. And that will be huge for their playoff chances. last thing I want to leave you, we're approaching just under the hour mark here. There was some news that came out recently from Mayor Lori Lightfoot's Twitter account, the Chicago mayor, about new renderings for Soldier Field. So let me show these to you guys. And if you're listening on the podcast, come on over to YouTube real quick and find these. We're at the like 48 minute mark almost here. She's tweeted out these renderings of a potential remodel for Soldier Field. And when you look at these pictures, here's the second one from the outside. If you're looking from the field towards museum campus, towards the field museum there. And then here's the one from the inside of the stadium that they've got, looking again north along the lakefront. At first glance, it looks great, right? Here, I'll run through them again. Nice, shiny, clean, colorful, beautiful Chicago sunsets here, right? First of all, I've never seen a sunset like that. That beautiful in the city, especially in the wintertime when it's full of snow. So let's kind of tone this down. And honestly, the filters they use on here looks like, girls on prom night trying to make themselves look the best. And it's just all filters here. So I'm not sold on these renderings. And first of all, look at how tall this one is. It's like a 5-6-story monstrosity on the lakefront here. I don't think they can build that high. You guys have all heard the story about the architect who designed a library and forgot to account for the weight of the books. And then the whole library sank when they put the books inside. To me, that's what looks like is going to happen here with the stadium design, that it's so huge and so expansive. There's nowhere for it to go but up, and it'll just sink, or it'll just be another eyesore. It looks like the mistake of the last architectural redevelopment just gets expounded. And if you're looking out from here, like, I don't even think this is to scale. Like, how are you going to fit, or it's got the exact outline of the skyline of the city here. And especially inside, it looks like you got a hotel on the inside. And these are all decks that people can hang out in. So it looks like they really are going to try to cater to these big name corporate sponsors putting huge, thousands of dollars suites in here. I just don't like it. For the Chicago Bears, who obviously have property in Arlington Heights that they're still negotiating a final purchase deal on. And I definitely don't like it for the Chicago Fire. I want to give a shout out to some of the guys in the Chicago Fire group chat that I'm a part of. First of all, shout out to Boo Booey for organizing it, for inviting me in, finding me on Twitter. We got a lot of good discussion going on about, well, this is great. You need to develop the city, let the people in the city have more room, have more seats, have more access, have state-of-the-art facility. But for me as a guy in the suburbs, and I'm definitely going like angry old suburban dad here, like, I don't want to drive my family all the way in, pay $40, $50 for parking and have to walk, a block to get to the stadium, even when I'm already there. But again, if the alternative is move out to the suburbs, then you've got the same argument from the people from the city, a lot of who don't have easy access to cars or transportation to get out to the suburbs. So I'd love a compromise where they can find a new lot somewhere in the city that they can develop not only a soccer-specific stadium, which is not Soldier Field, a soccer-specific stadium, as well as develop the area around it like Bridgeview was supposed to do. And yeah, I know I've got a case of disposed this here. But I would love to see that kind of compromise, something that would be much more reasonable in access and in price, as well as allowing the Chicago Fire to develop maybe some offices and training facilities, some additional pitches and things, rather than just have let's play our games in Soldier Field and everything else we do, business, training, events is going to be nowhere near it. So I'd like to see them all bring it in. So that's kind of my soapbox on Soldier Field, on the Fire. Let's take a few comments here before we wrap up the show here. We got Brian Baraju. Thanks for joining us, man. Welcome to the chat. Says Atlanta beats Chicago 2-1 on Saturday. Bold prediction. Chicago's offense is finding it. I can see Chicago scoring 2 against Atlanta. I said Chicago's at home that game. I don't know how well Atlanta travels, but Chicago's been, 4 straight wins at home or 4 unbeaten at home. So they are definitely in a groove. I think at worst, this is a draw for Chicago. But I appreciate the optimism from Atlanta, man. And I've loved watching Atlanta play over the last couple of seasons. So hopefully it's a good game. Talk NYCFC says too bad it's an open roof. Now the designs, if you look really closely, and let me see if I can find them again, it looks like there is a way to have a retractable roof, and I think that was all the talk from the mayor's office, that they are going to try and put a roof onto it. Brother BKO says, this is like Back to the Future to build Soldier Field Stadium. Yeah, a lot of people were saying it's like a spaceship that lands on there, right? Let's see what other comments we got. There's a lot of great chat about the U.S. Open Cup going on. We've got Talk NYCFC says SKC in Orlando in the final. Not a bad take on that one. Yeah, Brother BKL, holy cow, is that Soldier Field? You're absolutely right. That is what the rendering is going to be, but we will see. We will see. Now, a lot of good comments as well. Mueller is quick as a flash, said Red Bull Insider. Shaqiri is actually decent. Yeah, and he's only getting better, so watch out. And, yes, we need better players. Agreed. Chicago needs better players. Hey, Mounty has joined us. Mounty, thank you. Kyoto making defenses look foolish. He's having a good season. You know, if he continues his fine form, and you know, I said it about Reynoso in our last episode that he was kind of a dark horse MVP candidate. If Kyoto can keep scoring goals and keep contributing offensively, and I think a lot of voters are starting to get into some advanced stats. So if he can start maybe padding some of his passing statistics as well as his key passes and expected goals and all that stuff, Kyoto might have a shout for a long shot as an MVP candidate. But it's great to see Minnesota jumping back up the standings. Anyway, with that, folks, we are just about at the hour mark. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. It was a great chat. Thank you for letting me espouse a little bit about my hometown Chicago Fire here. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you to John Donovan and Skira Icelandic Spring Water for supporting the show and for keeping us up to date on all things Chicago Fire. If you would like to support the show as well, you can leave us a super chat during the live chats via YouTube or a super thanks after the video has run live and you're watching it on replay. Or you can contact us for a sponsorship if you'd like to discuss something bigger to promote yourself or your company. Direct message us on Twitter at SOP Soccer or email us, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone. Make sure that you like, subscribe, and share the video. And as well, if you do support us, all the money that we bring in goes right back into the channel because our mission here is to grow the sport of soccer through conversation. So we don't keep the money. We reinvest it in equipment, in software, in streaming capabilities, and a website I'm starting to develop. So keep your eyes open for that. So thank you to all of our supporters, our viewers, our listeners, especially our sponsors, to my good friend Mike for letting me come back and talk MLS with you all each and every week. Final thought, I am being asked for a prediction of the U.S. Open Cup. I like Sporting Kansas City and Red Bulls, and I just think it would be so MLS if Sporting Kansas City wins U.S. Open Cup and ends up like Wooden Spoon in the league. I think that would be so MLS, and I'm kind of here for it. Anyway, guys, I want to thank you all again. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be right back here again next week. Thank you. Hey everyone, Nick again for Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. Taking a page out of Marvel movie MCU playbook here and doing a little post-credit scene just to show off a little MLS memorabilia I've accumulated over the years. Just recently went to a Chicago Fire versus DC United game during Black History Month. This was one of the cards that they were giving out, kind of highlighting Black history and Black soccer. I'll try and bring it a little closer to the camera. We'll see if my green screen effects don't distort it too much. But as you can see, excellent artwork incorporating the traditional colors, the black, the yellow, the red, the green. And there's a quote on it from TGI Tay saying, "The way we nurture our kids' dreams will release the shackles or their futures." So again, great message, great cause, good little piece of memorabilia I wanted to share with you. Stay tuned for next week's broadcast. Thanks again, everyone.